CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is 8:40, and this is Dromotext. We will be with you until 9 p.m. We're now going to go to an interview with New York City-based artist Seth Tabachman, who you just heard will be launching a book which he co-authored here in Montreal tomorrow night called Understanding the Crash. Seth is joining us by phone. Good evening, Seth.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being with us. Maybe to start, could you give us a bit of an idea about Understanding the Crash? What is the book? What are some of the main ideas that are conveyed in this latest publication you've done?
Sure. It's a book that was inspired by a visit I made to my hometown of Cleveland. My aunt took me around a neighborhood called Union Miles, which is actually the neighborhood where my mother grew up. And it's a working class black community. And basically every single block had a boarded up house on it. And these were, these are new houses. They're not old, battered up houses, but they were boarded up, and this was because of the foreclosure crisis we've had in the United States. And so I began to study that and to try to get a handle on this new development, this recent development in the American economy that sort of intensified the type of exploitation that we've seen for 30 years. And brought it to a much wider section of the society. And researching that, I felt I needed to have some help with that because it really went into the areas of economics and, understanding Wall Street and banking institutions and all their sort of alphabet soup of abbreviated products. And so I brought in Eric Larson, who, along with being a journalist and a left-wing political activist, is also a writer for the business press at Times. And I also worked a little bit with Doug Henwood, who you probably know puts out a magazine called Left Business Observer. And we pulled together this graphic book, which you can read in one night and will explain to you the recent American financial crisis and how it developed. And it's a comic book.
The book has a bunch of stories in it, and it really tells from the ground beyond breaking down some of the statistics and information that often is lost in mainstream reporting on the financial crisis. You also go into personal stories of people who are struggling in the face of, economic injustice. Can you maybe talk about that choice to highlight those stories to paint that broader picture that you were talking about in graphic form?
Sure. Well, all politics is local and personal. And I was fortunate to be able to interview some of the people who had lost their homes or were losing their homes or fighting for their homes. Actually, I was interviewed more people who succeeded in winning because people who lose are hard to find because they disappear and they don't want to. Necessarily want to tell the world that they're enormously in debt. What I really spoke to were people who had struggled against the banks and won. For instance, a woman in Cleveland who had been almost been defrauded out of her home and had succeeded narrowly in keeping it. Another woman in Miami, an amazingly heroic woman named Mary Trody, who was foreclosed and lost her home and went back in and reoccupied her home and was able to take it back by direct action, working with a group called Take Back the Land in Miami, who have been seizing foreclosed houses and either giving them back to their owners or turning them over to homeless families and have been very successful in that. And more recently, since putting out the book, I've also worked with a group called Organized for Occupation in New York, which is doing the same thing in neighborhoods like Bedford-Stuyvesant, where there is a lot of foreclosure.
Now, you live in New York City, specifically in the Lower East Side. That's quite close to where the Occupy Wall Street action happened, an action that highlighted a lot of the issues that you've been mentioning and are also addressed directly in understanding the crash. Since Occupy Wall Street, there's been this interesting move to take action at a community-based level. And I know that there's been some different actions in Brooklyn where this issue of housing has been addressed, you know, through direct action, through organizing at a community-based level. I'm wondering if you could talk a bit from your perspective as an artist on Occupy Wall Street and these recent actions that have been happening around housing. Art has played a really central role in communicating a lot of these activities, these events, these actions to the outside world. So I was wondering if you could just reflect on these things a bit as an artist.
Well, I think that as an artist, I think that it's incredibly powerful to see people defy authority and really out of their courage and perhaps out of the moral embarrassment of the authorities to win at least small victories. For instance, this woman, Mary Ward in Bedford-Stuyvesant was supposed to be evicted from her house, which a bank had foreclosed on and had sold it to a landlord who she didn't recognize. She did not acknowledge that she felt she'd been swindled out of the house and that the landlord was not legitimate. And it looked like she was going to be evicted in August. And people from Organized for Occupation, we all went in and stood in her house and resisted the eviction. There was a line of people out front blocking the door. There was a line of people on the stairs. And then there were some of us who were with her. And then there was a big crowd in the street. And we were able to turn them away. And she's still there now, although her situation is still up in the air. And I was very much impressed by her spirit of refusing to compromise and take any kind of deal with the landlord and saying, well, this was stolen from me. I'm not going to acknowledge you. This is still my house. And, you know, saying as what she would say was that God would protect her. So that was amazing. And it was also amazing to see people take over Zuccotti Park. I would have to say that I had not expected Occupy Wall Street to be as successful as it was. I would have thought that people would have been thrown out very quickly because I lived through New York in the Giuliani period. The actions of the police were quite draconian. And people were able to hold the park for a couple of months. And this was because everybody came out and supported them. But there was actually a poll that showed that 72% of the people in New York City wanted the protest to stay in Zuccotti Park, didn't want it evicted from the park. And it was not until 3 months later that they finally mobilized and forced people out. And I'm now seeing, and quite, again, to my amazement, that people who were forced out of Zuccotti Park have reorganized and they're planning actions for May Day. And it's going to continue. And I think a big part of the strength of it is this idea that what we're addressing is the situation of everyone in of the 99% of, you know, both poor people and middle class people, you know, black people and white people, everyone who has been ripped off by the system. And because it's very clear that's what people are addressing, they have a lot of public support.
Can you talk a bit about the role of art in Occupy Wall Street? Artists were very present at that action, and I've seen various photos of you also drawing and creating signs there.
Sure. Well, that was kind of wonderful. Is what they did is they just had pieces of cardboard and paint, and anybody could make a sign. And so everybody made a sign, and I came down there and I said, well, gee, this is what I do. So I started painting lots and lots of pictures sitting there on the ground. Eventually someone came up to me and they said, well, you know, using up an awful lot of paint and an awful lot of cardboard. So I say, okay, next time I come down here, I'll bring some cardboard and I'll bring some paint. So every time I went there, I would bring art supplies. And eventually, I started to not only bring art supplies, I started to bring other artists. So people from our collective, World War III Illustrated, started painting a lot of signs and, you know, usually very simple things like, you know, images of sharks to symbolize the bankers or images of foreclosed houses. With very simple slogans. But what was really exciting about that was that, you know, Zuccotti Park is right in the middle of the busiest part of the business district. And people go there on their lunch breaks. And all the signs would be laid out on the ground to dry. And people would walk by and they'd just stand there reading all the signs. And these were like people who worked on Wall Street or construction workers who were working on rebuilding the World Trade Center or all kinds of people who you wouldn't necessarily think, oh, these people would be at a protest. But they just wanted to know what it was about, and the signs were there to explain it. And so that was kind of beautiful. And it was also beautiful that anybody, really anybody, could paint a sign, and they could write anything they wanted on that sign. So you had a lot of different points of view. You had very radical points of view, and you had somewhat more moderate points of view. You had people who were skilled artists painting things, but you also had, you know, things by little kids and absolutely anything there, and it was very beautiful.
And a lot of the issues that were addressed very publicly through Occupy Wall Street are very central to your latest book, Understanding the Crash, that you'll be launching in Montreal tomorrow night. I understand that the book was published a little bit before Occupy Wall Street happened. So given that book came out and people were wondering, it seems, for many months, how people would respond to this financial crisis and the bank bailout, and your book addressed a lot of these issues. So given you had drawn all these illustrations and the book had come out and then Occupy Wall Street happened, I mean, how did you feel about that chain of events?
Well, you know, there's been a movement to address the foreclosure crisis since it began. It's, you know, I got my inspiration from activists I met in Cleveland several years ago who were trying to save people's homes in Union Miles. And then other activists I met in Miami who were doing the same thing. So there's been a continuous developing movement around these issues. It really started in black communities and working class communities where people were fighting to keep their homes. And then it spread out just as the crisis spread out. And the crisis affected every type of person in American society. And as that happened, the movement around the crisis also spread. And so this has been developing for a while. For instance, there was a huge protest in May of last year, a year ago, in the Wall Street area. It was primarily the teachers' unions who organized the protest, but it was massive. And I did a lot of artwork for that along with David Solnit. We did banners that said, banks get bailed out, we get foreclosed, we get angry. And with stencils on them. And, that protest, I think, fed into Occupy, which became the most photogenic or the most visible protest. But really, this is something that's been building in the United States for about 3 years. And perhaps building in the world as well with the protests in Europe and the protests in Egypt. This whole notion of, like, mass population taking to the streets because they know that the economy's been mismanaged to their disadvantage. And it doesn't surprise me that, the movement would get larger. It perhaps surprised me how successful Occupy itself was. But it's been coming for a while.
Just a last question, Seth. This book that you'll be launching in Montreal tomorrow, Understanding the Crash, is one book of many, many books. A lot of people who have been involved with social justice work would recognize your images. You also authored War in the Neighborhood. You authored the book You Don't Have to Fuck People Over to Survive. And you have done so many posters for various protest movements for many years. Why that choice as an artist to be so involved in social justice struggles? I know it's a huge question, but you know, a lot of artists really focus on their work in an individual sense, but your work for many decades has looked at how art can contribute to social movements. Can you maybe reflect on that a bit?
Well, I think that, to me, the greatest art is the art of indigenous peoples and, you know, the cave paintings and the very early art human beings did, which is actually most of the existence of human beings, the longest time we were on the earth that we did this type of art, and that art addressed the survival concerns of the community, that people would, you know, paint animals because they were hunting animals, they were hunted by animals, and they had to understand animals. And they produced some of the most beautiful and powerful art people have ever produced. And so that's what inspires me. And I feel that the art I'm doing is also art about the community's need to survive, the community's need to continue. And I try to address issues that we all share. That's not because I'm negating myself. I have those issues too. Those are my feelings, and I understand my feelings as not being different from everyone else's, but being part of the same pool of emotion, the same pool of concern that everyone has. So I don't feel that there is a disconnect between the personal and the political. I think that that's the disconnect that's been forced on us by the contemporary culture, which tries to tell us that we are all in conflict with each other, that that's the natural state, that my concerns are so different from your concerns that they're simply incompatible, and that society's concerns have to be different from mine. I think society's concerns have to be the same as mine. That's the problem, is that society has become alienated from the people who are in it. And that institutions have become autonomous of the human beings who support them. So I think that, you know, to me it's a question of reintegration, of the really returning to the normal state of the human being, which is that we are individuals who are part of a community, and that community needs to survive, and we're all interdependent. So I feel that that's the normal state of art. I think that art that is alienated from human concerns, that's weird, you know, and that's what the culture has, how the culture has developed, is to tell us that art has no relevance to human concerns, that it exists sort of for its own sake. And I think the greatest art that human beings have produced is quite the opposite. It's deeply involved in the concerns of human beings and their survival.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight on DromoText, Seth Tabakman.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with artist Seth Tabakman, who will be launching a book that he co-authored with Eric Larson, who's a writer and activist. Both of them are based for many years in New York City, and the book is called Understanding the Crash. The book will launch tomorrow night at the fifth edition of Howl, which will be taking place at La Plante, which is located at 185 Van Horn. Seth Tabakman will be performing with two musicians also from New York, alongside a Montreal quartet called Marathon, and the Chaotic Insurrection Ensemble, which is the street marching band that a lot of people have been seeing on the news recently as they've been giving a soundtrack to the student protests that have been taking to the streets of Montreal over the last weeks and months. The time is 8:58, and this has been Dromo Text. It's been a pleasure being with you tonight. I'm Stefan Christoph, your regular host, Fortner Anderson. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned to CKUT 90.3 FM, people-powered radio. We're going to be going out with a track from Rebel Diaz, American Nightmare, another group of New York City artists. The freeway, you playing for the wrong team. You should just request a trade. What if King James is like Muhammad Ali? Okay, what if Jay-Z talked about getting free? Instead of more beef, we need more greens. So we plant more trees on these concrete streets. Please don't leave when you get that degree. Fat cats get the cheese, but we ain't making no breeze. See, I stay on the block like return deliveries. And I don't want your company if it includes misery.